Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Daf Lamed Gimel in Maseches Bechoros. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's Shiur about 15 lines from the top of Daf Lamed Gimel. In the middle of the line, you'll notice a framed section introduced by the expression Tonu Rabbonon. Before we learn the Gemara, we have a topic heading in the outside margin under the word Nosei, Nosei being a topic. From time to time, we provide topic headings and structural notes when needed. Structural notes are referred to by the term Mivne. In this case, we have written under our Nosei heading, Machloikes Beishame Ubeis Hillel. We'll see a controversy between these two schools of Tanaic thought. I Ma'achilin B'chor Ba'amum L'nidois Tumo Yoitza Migufoi. Do we feed B'chor, firstborn male animal meat that has been slaughtered, a B'chor, this firstborn male that had been found to be a blemished animal, and hence could not be offered as a sacrifice? Do we allow a nida, this is a woman experiencing her monthly feminine cycle, she's really representative of different forms of tumah that emanate from one's body. Included in this would be a zav, a zava, a yoledes, and the nida as well. This is in contrast with other types of tumah that are of extraneous origin. For example, tumas mei, someone who comes into contact with the dead, or tumas nevela, or tumas sheretz. These are non-tumah yotzeh lav migufo. So our Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, b'chor, ein machilin oisoi lenidois, divrei beishamai. One is not to offer b'chor meat to a nida. That's as far as Beishamai is concerned. Beis Hillel Omrim, Machilin Oisoi Lunidos. That one is able to. There's no objection. My time of Beishamai. Dichtiv, what is the reason for Beishamai? Well, it says in the Pasuk, Uvisora Mieloch, Kachazei Hatnufa. The Pasuk is saying that the meat shall be like unto you, like the Chaze, like the Chazei Hatnufa, is the breast meat of a korban shlomim that is given to kohanim as their kohen portion from various korbanas. So the b'chor ba'al mum meat is compared to the chazeh. Ma hosam nidois loy. Just like over there, nidos are not allowed to partake of the chazeh meat that a kohen receives as his portion from sacrifices. Af hocha nidos lo. So too over here, with regard to the b'chor ba'al mum meat, the nidos are not allowed. Ubeis Hillel. Beis Hillel's response to that is, Hani mili tam. That is true that a nido is not allowed to partake of b'chor meat. That's if it's unblemished. Avo ba'al mum. But when it comes to the meat of a baal mum, of a blemished firstborn, there's another pasuk that's referred to, and this we actually saw at the end of our previous shiur, Hatomei Vator Yochlenu. This is taken from Dvorim, Perek Tezvav, pasuk Chof Beis. U Beis Shamai. Notice we're squiggle underlining the names in order to keep track of how each one responds to the other one's opinion. So Beis Shammai says, Hani mili, hecha de'ein tuma yoitza alav migufo. This is true when the pasuk says, Hatome v'toro yochlenu, when you're dealing with a tuma that does not emanate from oneself, for example, Tumas Meis, Tumas Sheretz, then we can say that a Bechor Baal Mum is able to partake of the meat. Aval Hecho de Tuma Yotze Olav Migufa Lo. However, when the source of Tuma is from the individual himself, as we are discussing Nidos, then this leniency does not apply, namely the leniency of a Tome being allowed to partake of the meat. The Ashkechon, we have found, there is precedent, the Polig Rachmona. Polig means distinction. The Rachmona, the Torah. The Torah makes a distinction, Bein Tuma Yoytza Olav Migufo, the Bein Tuma She'ein Yoytza Olav Migufo. Between these two forms of Tuma, one Tuma that's Yoytza Olav Migufo, that emanates from oneself, versus Tuma that is based on an extraneous source, the Snan, and he presents this precedent. And you'll notice, before we go any further, we're in the middle of a long comment made by Beis Shammai. This is indicated by the long point marking that you can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. A nun had been circled a little couple lines above with a descending vertical dashed line. And here, he presents the basis or the source where you see such a distinction. HaPesach Shebo B'tuma, a Korban Pesach, which is a special Korban brought on the 14th of Nisan. If the majority of the population are Tomei, and we'll speak about Tumas Meis, they are Tomei as a result of defilement to a mace, to a corpse, that's called a Pesach HaBo B'Tumah. Lo Yochlu Mimenu Zovim V'Zovos V'Nidos V'Yoldos. You can see they, as opposed to the Tomei mace, these people, the Zav, Zava, Nidos, and all those different forms of Tuma that emanates from one's body, they are not allowed to partake of it. This is in contrast with a Tomei mace. Ubeis Hillel, Hasam hu degoli Rachmona. Pesach, Beis Hillel says, over there, by Pesach, there is, in fact, a revelation to making this distinction. Tomei Nefesh. It says, the Torah says over there, Tomei Nefesh means only Tomei Mace, where only a Tomei Mace has a leniency. Aval Hocha, Tomei Stamoksiv, Lo Shna. But in the case of Bechor, it said, Ha Tomei Vator Yachdov, making no distinction. Namely, even the Nidos and other similar Tumas Hayotzilov Mikufo are included in the allowance of eating Bechor Baal Mum meat. So at this point then, the discussion between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai ends, each one presenting their own sources in Psukim for their respective positions. Before going ahead in the next sugya, you'll notice on the side we have a Nosei Mivneh heading. The diamond with a colored in tip is featured in the upcoming Gemara. This deals with a topic called Ein Margilin, and that's Lahafshit Or Sholem. This is a process where the skinning starts from the legs of the animal, the Margilin from the word Regel. This is an attempt on the part of the owner to remove the skin intact, so that eventually you would have a type of something that would remind you of a float, a full cow, if you will. This then could be inflated with air and used as a bellows. So the process of removing the skin in that fashion is called margilin. And we might as well say, as the Gemara will point out later, it involves a great deal of effort, a lot of tircha. It's not simple to create this type of skinning, and to perform this kind of skinning, to create a bellows. Now, the concept of Ein Margilin has applications in a number of places, a number of areas of halacha. One is with regard to Yom Tov. These are the terms you find in diamonds in our Gemara. They're featured in a Tanaic source. So one does not do this process when it comes to Yom Tov, on a holiday. And one is not to do this with a firstborn male animal, a Bechor. Nor is one to do this with regard to Psulei Hamukdashim. These are animals that were dedicated as sacrifices and became unfit. For example, a blemish arose, and then the animal is set aside to be redeemed, and once it's redeemed, even though you're allowed to eat the meat, nevertheless, you're not allowed to remove the skin in a margilin fashion. Now, what is the basis for each one of these particular restrictions? So now we We'll see that in the Gemara. So our Gemara begins, Tanu Rabbanan, Ein Margilin B'Yom Tov, Kayotze Bo, similarly, Ein Margilin B'Vachor, V'lo B'Psula HaMukdashim. Bishlamo Yom Tov, Bishlamo means I understand, or it's well, when it comes to Yom Tov, that one is not allowed to do Margilin, Dekot Torach Tircha D'Lo Chazi Lei. One is engaging in extra exertion of efforts, and Yom Tov is a time that we look askance upon exertion, and unless the exertion is Yom Tov related, it would be forbidden. And in this case, the creation of a bellows is not Yom Tov related, so it's called Lo Chozile. It's not fit for him on Yom Tov, so it's not allowed to be done. Elo Bechor Mai Taimo. Man Tano, as far as Bechor, who is the author of this Margilin restriction with regard to firstborn male animals? Omar Rav Chisda, Beis Shammai Hi. This is in accordance with Beis Shammai, who views the Bechor Balmum as having its original sanctity, insofar as who said, Omar Ein Machilin Oisei Linidos. We saw this above. Beis Shammai said that a Bechor Balmum you cannot feed to Anida. So he's viewing it as having its original Kedusha, even after it's been shechted, even after it's been slaughtered. He's viewing it like a Tam, like a an unblemished Bechor. Just like a Tam, you would not allowed to do Margilin because of something called Bizoyon Kashim, because a Bechor Tam, an unblemished firstborn, is a full-fledged sacrifice. And the Margilin process involves ruination of a lot of the meat. A lot of cutting and slashing and shredding of the meat takes place when you're doing the Margilin. And the reason for that is because you're afraid to make any slit in the skin. So all of that ruination of the meat is considered a desecration or a denigration of that which is sanctified. So Beis Shammai, as we saw, they treat the Bechor Balmum almost with the same respect that you treat a Bechor Tam, an unblemished one, as was illustrated by their restriction in feeding Bechor Balmum meat to a Nida. So this source that says you're not margil by a Bechor, Rav Chisda tells us that's according to Beis Shammai. Veloi, the Gemara goes on with the third diamond, Velo Bipsule Hamukdashim. One is not allowed to do Margilin to Psule Hamukdashim. Ma'an Tana, who is the author of that idea? Omar Rav Chisda, Rav Elozer, Rav Shimon Hi. Before we go any further, we have a new marking to describe. We see a triangle and we have a little one next to it. On the outside margin under our Nosei Mivne heading, we feature the triangle and we've written Ein Margilin Bipsule Hamukdashim Man Tano, who is the author of that idea, and there are Gimel Chuvos. That means there are three answers. If you scan ahead in the Gemara to Amud Beis, you'll notice two more triangles appear for a total of three opinions addressing who is the author of this idea of Ein Margilin B'Psula HaMukdashim. We explained earlier, P'Psula HaMukdashim are those animals that were set aside as sacrifices and developed a blemish and hence become unfit to be offered on the Mizbeach. You eventually redeem them, transfer their sanctity onto money, and buy other korbanos. And with regard to the original animal, which is called P'Psula HaMukdashim, so we know that you're allowed to slaughter and eat it, but beyond that, there are many limitations. So we're taught here that according to Rabbi Elozer Rabbi Shimon, as far as Rav Chisda is concerned, he appears in the triangle, he, Rabbi Elozer Rabbi Shimon, would forbid Margilin by Psula HaMukdashim. Now, the Gemara brings a Tanaic source, and it says Disnan, or there's another Girsa Disanya, a Tanaic source all the same. You can see we have a frame around the next several lines of Gemara. The source won't talk about Margilin in a direct fashion. However, the source will address the way we deal with Psule HaMukdashim. And from this discussion, we will see that Rabbi Elozer, Rabbi Shimon, takes a very serious stance with regard to these situations. Let us now see the source and then make the final connection between the din of Ein Margilin by Psalm Mikdashim and Shitas from Elazar Ben Shimon, who appears in the source. You can see he's toward the end of the source. His name has been underlined. So the source describes a person who was guilty or chayav, obligated to bring a sin offering, a korban chatos. He set aside two animals, one as a backup for the other. The source says, this is a person who has set aside two korban chatos, one as a security for the other, and one of them developed a blemish. Tamimo tikrav balas mum tipodeh. The unblemished one shall be offered, and the blemished one shall be redeemed. Nishchato balas mum. After the balas mum had been redeemed, it was then slaughtered. So we have a chatos bal mum, that's an example of psul mikdashim, that's now sitting there and slaughtered. So the meat is ready to eat. However, im ad shaloi nizrak doma shel tamima, if it was slaughtered, the blemished balmum, the blemished chatos, was slaughtered before the sprinkling of the unblemished korban chatos, muteris. So the blemished one will be allowed. You can eat it. Even though the sprinkling of the real korban chatos, the unblemished one, takes place before you actually eat it. The main thing is that the slaughtering of the blemished one took place before the owner received his atonement through the unblemished korban chatos. That's sufficient for enabling you to benefit from the balas mum. However, im mishenizrak domo shel tamimo, if the slaughtering of the blemished one took place after the sprinkling of the blood of the tamima, then the blemished one will be forbidden. And this is called a chatos shekipru baleo. There are numerous rules that apply to a korban chatos, and there are, in fact, according to certain Tanoim, there are five examples of a korban chatos that are rendered unfit. One of those examples, and when it's rendered unfit, it is set aside to die, or is rendered just simply unfit, as in this case, where if you have a person who received his atonement through a korban chatos, any other korban chatos that he may have around is rendered unfit. Any other korban chatos brought for this particular offense, of course, is rendered unfit. In this case, the balmum, being that it was not slaughtered until the sprinkling of the blood of the tamima took place, the sprinkling renders that other one, the blemished one, unfit. Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon Omer, afilu basar bosar bekedera, even if the meat of the blemished balmum, not only was it already slaughtered before the sprinkling, but it was already put in a pot, ready to be cooked up and eaten. It went way ahead in its, let's say, preparation. And at that point, v'nizrak doma shel tamimo asura. Namely, as long as the balmum meat is around, as long as you haven't eaten it, and the zrika of the tamim takes place, that basar balmum is rendered unfit. This shows us that Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon is taking this basar balmum very seriously, even after it's been slaughtered. The Rashi points out on the second line under the Gemara, Imish is Nizrak Domo Shel Tmima, Nishchato, Asura, Afilu Bahano. This is going on the Tanakama, namely if the Shkita of the Balmum took place after the Zrikas Adam of the Tmima, so then that Balmum is Asur, Afilu Bahano, even to benefit from it. Dahavilo Chatos Shikibu Baleo Lemisa Azla. It's an example of a Chatos. This Chatos Balmum that hasn't been shechted yet is an example of a Korban Chatos whose owners received atonement. Ulamisa Azlan is destined to be killed or to die. Dezuhi Achas Mi Chomesh Chatos HaMesu. This is one of the five examples of a Chatos who is destined to be set aside to die. Now, the next Rashi says, Afu Bor Bekedera Asura. Bosar balas mum. The meat of the blemished firstborn will be rendered unfit. The sfirale afilu l'achar shchita, even after it has been slaughtered, b'kedushasayu kaimi, it still has its high level of sanctity. It's still viewed as a korban chatos, and as a result of that, v'chatos shikibu baleil mikri. It's called a chatos, mind you, it's meat in a pot. But he's still calling it a chatos. He's still calling it a sin offering whose owner has received his atonement through another source. And as a result of that, it is rendered unfit. So we see that Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon is willing to call even the meat of the chatos balmum as a chatos. How does this tie into our discussion? Therefore, you can understand very well that he would not allow margilin, this full skinning, full skin removal of a psulei hamukdashim. As you can see, he considers something having the status of a psulei hamukdashim even as it's about to be eaten. The Gemara goes on, focusing on Shitas Rav Chisda, who had mentioned earlier regarding the Bechor Ein Margilin section as saying that was Beis Shammai. But then Rav Chisda, when it came to the Psulei HaMikdashim Ein Margilin, Rav Chisda there said that's according to Rav Elazar ben Shimon. So the Gemara asks, then if you'll notice, we have a few arrows to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. If you line them up, you'll see how it's pointing to the former comments of Rav Chisda. So the Gemara asks, "V'Rav Chisda lukma kula kebe shamai?" Why does Rav Chisda not say that the restriction of margilin by psul mukdashim is also according to Beis Shammai? In other words, just like Beis Shammai is restrictive with regard to the Bechor, Beis Shammai would be restrictive also with regard to Psulei HaMukdashim. So, the double underline, by the way, you'll see on the outside margin under our Mivneh heading, are Hatzo'ois Chilufi'ois. These are alternative suggestions, V'amodas HaMokos Shel Ein Margilin B'Psulei HaMukdashim, regarding the authorship of the source that said Ein Margilin by Psulei HaMukdashim. Up till now, Rav Chisda mentioned it is Rav Elazar ben Shimon. Here we're going to suggest alternatives. And one of them is, why not say it is taught according to Beis Shammai? The Gemara says, Dilma ad kan lo karmi Beis Shammai ela b'Bechor. It could be that Beis Shammai's restriction with regard to Margilin is actually limited to the case of Bechor. The Kedushasoi Meirechem. The Bechor is a high-level sanctity. It is something that, even without my sanctifying it, it becomes sanctified by virtue of the fact that it emerged from the birth canal. Aval Psumukdashim, the Ein Kedushasoi Merechem, it's lesser significant. It's less significant in the sense that it's not sanctified automatically at the point of birth. Well, maybe there, Beis Shammai would not impose their restriction of Margilin. Another suggestion, V'lukmo kula ku Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon. Why not say the whole source is in fact according to Rebbe Elazar Shimon? Why is it that Rav Chisda said that the Behor restriction was taught according to Beis Shammai, when he could have said, just like Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon is strict with regard to the Psalm of Dashim, Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon would be strict with regard to Behor. So the Gemara responds, Dilma ad kan lo koma Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon, Hasam el Psalm of Dashim. It could be that Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon said his strict ruling only with regard to Psalm of Dashim. In why? The Alimi, they are strong. They have their sanctity strength. Lemitvas pidyono, their sanctity is so strong that it is able to grab on to and be transferred to money. Aval b'chor delo olim lemitvas pidyono. A b'chor, we know, is not something that can be redeemed. So that might be a reflection of a certain sanctity weakness. It's not strong enough to grab onto money. It doesn't have the strength that Psulim Mukdoshim does have, and hence b'chor is something that can't be redeemed. So maybe they're low. Maybe in that such a case, the case of the b'chor, Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon would not say that it is restricted in Margilin. The Gemara asks, "V'Rabbi Elazar Rebbe Shimon less lay, does he not hold from the following?" Now we'll see a source, and from the upcoming discussion, we will learn that wherever Kochim, wherever the realm of sanctified animals or called Beis HaMikdash funds, it comes into question, if there's any profit for the Beis HaMikdash to reap, we will actually compromise our standards. An example that the Gemara will give is taking meat and selling it in a public fashion. One might say that the public sale of meat has a certain element of degradation, a certain cheapening of it in the sense of public exposure. And yet we know that if one is allowed or able to sell meat in a public fashion and weigh it out as one does commercially, that will bring in a higher price for it than if one were to sell it from his home without weighing it out. But since this method of commerce, public sales with weighing it to get an exact measure and weight of the meat, since that will bring in more money, we allow it to be done with regard to psulei mikdashim, korbanos that were rendered unfit. This, by the way, is in contrast with a bechor, which even though it may be sold, it cannot be sold in a public fashion because the beneficiary is the owner, not the Beis HaMikdash. The beneficiary would be the Kohen, who is the owner of it. Or, in the case of Meister Behema, the beneficiary of that would be the owner, not the Beis HaMikdash. And in those examples, in the case of Bechor and Meister, one is not allowed to weigh it out and sell it in public. But when the Beis HaMikdash fund stands to benefit, we compromise. So too, what the question we're leading up to is, why not allow margilin by the psula mikdashim? Because if you're able to create a bellows, that is, if someone could buy an animal and then be allowed to do margilin, he will pay a lot more, we think, for such an animal. And therefore, if we would allow margilin, when it comes to redeeming that particular psula mukdashim, people will offer a lot of money, redemption money for it, and the Beis HaMikdash fund will benefit. So why would Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon take this approach of forbidding margilin? Let us now read this inside. For Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon, less lay, does he not hold from the following source, the following teaching? Kol psulei hamukdashim nimkoren beitliz v'nishkolin belitra. All sacrifices that have been found to be blemished, and hence they're called psulei hamukdashim, they can be sold in a butcher shop and weighed out by scales, with the exception of Behor and Meiser. And that is because that Bechor Meiser, the ones who would benefit from the increased value would be the owners and not the Beis HaMikdash. But Alma, we see from here, Kima the Iko Revocha LeHekdesh, with regard to other Psu HaMikdashim, since the Hekdesh benefits, Revocha, the increased profit or benefit to Hekdesh, Shari Lay, one is allowed to do the sales, one can perform the sales of Psu HaMikdashim in Anitlis and weigh them out by scale. So too over here, with regard to Margilin, if a person knows he could skin the animal and achieve a complete skinning, a full bellow fashion skinning, he will offer more money. Omar Rav Mori Brei Rav Kahana. Rav Mori explains that this profit margin will actually not be achieved. That which you benefit in the increased value of a complete skin, you actually will lose in the value of the meat. As we mentioned earlier, in order to achieve a margilin, in order to achieve this float type skinning, you're going to have to shred and cut into the different parts of the meat and leave it as called mincemeat, and thereby there will be a great devaluation in the value of the meat that will offset any profit that you may have achieved through the margilin of the skin. So there is no net benefit to the Hegdish fund. You notice we have a triangle and a number 2 next to it. This is addressing the authorship of Ein Margilin B'Psul HaMikdashim. B'Marova Mishmei D'Ravino Amri, they tell us that it's not limited to one Tanaic opinion, but rather it's according to everyone, B'Pnei Shenira Ke'Iveid Avido B'Kodshim. The reason that we don't do a Margilin by B'Psul HaMikdashim is because it looks as if we are using the Mukdashim for our own benefit. The Rashi says, "Bamarova Amri Li'el Kali." First of all, Rashi makes what we like to call in our Gemara markings Shiurim a structural note. That's why our markings help in appreciating that which you see in the Rishonim. Rashi says, Li'el Koi, this is going back, this is a throwback to something earlier. The triangle helps you connect this to the first one, which showed we are involved with this determining authorship of the Ein Margilin Halacha. So Rashi tells you it goes back to that discussion. Klomar, Li'olom Divrei HaKoil Hi, that as opposed to we saw the previous approach of Rav Chisda, which said it was only according to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, this approach says it's according to all opinions. The Osir LaHagil, the Bizon Gadol Hu, it's a great desecration. Shenira Ke'Oved Avodo B'Kodshim, it gives the impression that one is using Kodshim, using sanctified animals for one's own benefit. Shemoichrin Ha'or L'Tzorch Mapoach Kishu Adayin Al HaKodshim, because he's going to be selling, he'll end up selling the skin and for the purpose of a bellows when the animal is still Kodshim. The Gemara goes on with a third opinion. Rabbi Yossi Bar Ovin Omer, the Ein Margilin B'Psul HaMikdashim is, in fact, again, according to all opinions, Xero Shema Yigdal Mehen Adorim Adorim. Rashi explains, Shema Yigdal Mehem Adorim Adorim Kloimar, Divrei HaKoil Osur LaHagil. Everyone, not just, like Rav Chisda said, just one opinion, Rav Elazar Shimon, but everyone will agree, it's forbidden to Margil, the Isharis Lay, if we would allow it, Osi Lishuye Milishoi, he will delay in slaughtering his psulei hamukdashim ad shinsa bnei adam hamavakshim oro shleimim, until he finds customers. Apparently, it wasn't a high demand item. Ubeinkach, in the meantime, until he finds a customer, and he hasn't shechted the animal yet, Yigdal Adorim, Ipsalam Gdoshim, he'll end up raising it, using it to raise additional generations of animals. And he'll be raising Adorim, or flocks, from Psulim HaMugdoshim, V'Osibu Lidei Takolo, L'Gizu Avoda. In the meantime, as long as the animal is alive, there's always a fear that he's going to use it, he's going to shear it, or he'll use it for plowing purposes, which are forbidden activities when it comes to Psulim HaMugdoshim. So that the knowledge that he would have been able to skin it in a complete fashion will encourage him to leave the animal around until he finds a customer for a Margilin type skin situation, for a bellows, and the delay of the animal, the leaving around of this Psulim HaMugdoshim, will only lead to a to a what's known as a takola, where one will stumble and use it for something that he's not supposed to. The Mishnah. Bechor she'ochsoi dam afilu meis. Ochso dam is, for our purposes, a malady, which the Mishnah is describing as it's so intense where if you don't treat it, you don't treat it through bloodletting, the animal will die. This bechor, this firstborn male animal, will die. Ein makizin loy es hadam. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. We will see a number of Tanaic opinions regarding this particular topic, but the first opinion, Rabbi Yehuda says, even if the animal is going to die without bloodletting, leave it to die. The Rashi explains, Ein makizin lo es hadam, ve'afilu b'mokum she'ein oisin boy mum. Even in a place on the body where the bloodletting, where the slit, the lancet slit that one makes in order to release the, we'll call the oversupply of dam, or the need to bloodlet, it's an incision that one would make in a part of the body that will heal. Still, Rebuta restricts this. And thusly, it's explained in the first parak of Maseches Psochim, Mitov Sholem Bol Al Mamono. Since a person, when it comes to his possessions, he becomes confounded and loses sight of what he's dealing with. If we make any allowance, even though it be in a place on the body which won't cause it to become blemished, we should point out that it is forbidden to impose a blemish on a sanctified animal. But Rabbi Yehuda is going so far as to say, even on a place of the body that won't result in it becoming blemished, we will still restrict the bloodletting. Because if we make any allowance, he will come to impose, or it will come to bloodlet even on a part of the body that will make it into a mum. We continue in the Mishnah. The Chachomim omrim yakiz. The Chachomim say one is allowed to bloodlet the bechor that needs it, ubilvad shelo yase boi mum, provided you don't make this lancet slit which releases the blood in a part of the body that would result in it becoming a mum. In other words, a part of the body that once you make a slit there, it won't heal and leave it blemished. V'im osa boi mum, if he did make a mum, hare ze lo yishchat olov, then one cannot rely on that particular blemish as an allowance for the shechita, as would be ordinarily when a bechor develops a blemish on its own. Rabbi Shimon Omer, yakiz afapishu oise bo mum. Rabbi Shimon says you can bloodlet even in a place of the body that a mum might result. Rav Shimon is of the opinion that Dover Shein Miskavi Mutter, that if, since his intent was to heal the animal, to save it from dying, his intent was not to impose a mum. Therefore, even if a mum happens to result, that wasn't your intent. Therefore, Rav Shimon says it's okay. The Gemara, Tana Rabbanan. In this source, we will see a number of Tanaic opinions similar to what we saw in the Mishnah, a number of opinions regarding hakoza, the bloodletting of a bechor, of a firstborn male animal, that otherwise, in this case, is other than the fact that it happens to be ochsoy dam, it doesn't have any additional blemishes. In the course of our discussion, it will arise that the fact that it's ochsoy dam may in fact categorize it as a balmum itself. However, besides that, there isn't any other blemish, and the issue right now is imposing this sliving the animal in order to release the blood for bloodletting purposes. Before going on in the Gemara, let us glance at the outside margin to get a picture of what is going to take place in the sugya. So we have a nosei, a topic heading, and we've indicated point one, people the b'chor shel sodam, the way to handle the handling of a bechor that is sickly because of this phenomenon called ochsoy dam, bayas matil mum bebal mum. The issue, the overall issue, is called imposing an additional mum in something that's already a bal mum. That we're referring to this as already a bal mum is because the fact that it's so sickly that it's ochsoy dam that makes it into a bal mum. So can one impose an additional blemish in something that's already categorized as a bal mum? A second issue that's going to come up later in the Gemara is shmira, the guarding of lechavis, truma, a barrel of truma, tithe, wine, shenoilad bo sofek tuma, a barrel of truma. Truma is a tithe that's separated from one's produce and given to a Kohen, and one must treat truma with a certain level of sanctity. Let us say you have a barrel of truma that developed a suffix, a doubt concerning its tara, or it's what we call suffix tuma. Hagemora tinaseh lahashvois ashitois shemofim b'shnei noisim hanal. The Gemara will make an attempt to parallel the Tanaic opinions reflected in the Bechor source with the Tanaic opinions arising in the Truma source. Avo b'hem sheikh, but as the sugya continues, tidche nisayon zeh. The Gemara will reject this particular attempt. Let us now turn to the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, b'chor she'ochso dam mekizim lo esadam b'mokoyim she'ein oise boi mum. A b'chor that became ill in this form called ochso dam, one is allowed to bloodlet on a part of the body that will heal, that won't result in it becoming a blemished b'chor. V'ein makizin lo es adam b'makom she'oisin boi mum. Divrei Rabbi Meir. One is not allowed to bloodlet in a part of the body that would leave it scarred or leave it blemished. V'chachomim omrim yakiz af b'makom she'oisin bo mum. The chachomim allow the bloodletting even on a part of the body that would result in the animal becoming blemished, provided he doesn't slaughter it based on that particular blemish that he made outright. Rabbi Shimon Omer, af nishchat al oisoy hamum. Rav Shimon says that one could slaughter it based on that particular blemish. Rav Yehuda Omer, afilu meis ein makizin lo esadam. This opinion of Rabbi Yehuda we saw in the Mishnah as well, that even if the animal's life is threatened, one is not allowed to perform hakozas dam, bloodletting. Masni lei Rav Elozer lebrei. Rabbi Elozer taught this source. He taught this to his son. The Amri law, another version as far as the names are concerned. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Libre, He taught his son. That's Reb Chiya bar Abba was teaching his son. What did he teach? Kemachloikis kan kach machloikis b'chavis shel truma. So either Reb Elazar according to the first version of names, or Reb Chiya bar Abba according to the second version, as far as the names are concerned, taught their son that just like we see a machloikis in the case of Bechor Shoch Sodam, there's a parallel machloikis in the case of Chovis Shel Truma, the barrel of Truma that developed Sofek Tuma. And what our job will be is to see how, or see the parallel Shitas. So the source begins, Chovis Shel Truma Shenolad Bos Sofek Tuma, a barrel of Truma wine in which there developed a Tuma doubt. Reb Elazar Omer, Im if the barrel was seated, was located in a place that's, tuma oriented, turfa means it's open to ruination, then move it to a place that is hidden or secure or distanced from tuma. Likewise, if the barrel was open and hence subject to becoming puzzle, yichasena, cover it up. In other words, according to Reb Elazar, you're expected, with regard to the Chovis of Truma, to take preventive measures. Let's go on in the source before we go through the process of trying to parallel these opinions with the ones mentioned before. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, or Yeshua, in contrast with Rabbi Elazar, says, "Im hoyse munachs b'mokam al-mutzna, yanichene b'mokam al-torfo." He says quite the opposite, that if you're allowed to take measures to expose the chavish al truma to a problem, if this chavish al truma that had a sofik tuma that arose in it was in a protected type place, actually put it in an exposed place where it's exposed to tuma. Vim hoyse mechus yigalena. And if it was covered, well, expose it. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, lo yichadesh ba dovar. Rabbi Gamliel says, don't make anything new, meaning maintain the status quo. Now, what the Gemara does is it parallels the Shitas. In this last source, we had three Shitas of Tanoim, and now the Gemara will parallel these three with three Shitas that were seen in the earlier source. So, in this most recent source, we saw Reb Elazar, who said you should take preventive measures. We would like to suggest Rabbi Meir in the Bechor source, which said that you're not allowed to be mekiz dam in a part of the body that a mum would result. In other words, Rabbi Meir has certain restrictions. So Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Eliezer, it would seem that Rabbi Meir, who says you shouldn't mess it up, and does allow some form of solution, of salvation, if you're not going to mess it up, that would parallel Rabbi Lozer, that says you're not allowed to cause tuma to the barrel of wine. Rabbanan, Kirbi Yeshua, and the Chachomim in the Bechor source that said you're allowed to bloodlet even on a part of the body that a blemish would result, would go like Rabbi Yeshua in the case of the barrel of wine, who says you can even expose the wine to a problem. So just like the Rabbanan in the Bechor source said you can expose it to blemishing, here Rabbi Yeshua says you can expose the wine to tuma, they would seem to parallel. Rabbi Yehuda, Karabon Gamliel. And Rabbi Yehuda, in the Bechor source, says just don't do anything. Even if it dies, don't bloodlet. Would seem to parallel Rabbi Gamliel, who said just don't do anything to the barrel of wine, leave it as it is, maintain the status quo. This, we should have pointed out earlier, is essentially the end of a long point. The point began where you see the nun that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, a few lines up, and you see in the narrow lines, nun represents nekuda, point. And the point was made that three the three shitas in the Truma source could have been paralleled with three of the shitas in the Bechor source. At this point, the Gemara rejects this paralleling attempt. And you can see, we have a note on the also to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. We call this Dechia. And this is symbolized, once again, by the Dechia term you see in the outside margin with a descending vertical dashed line, which is actually quite a long marking because this discussion, we are considering one long discussion till we go till the upper part of Lamed Dalid Omed Aleph. The triangles that you see in the Gemara are explained under the Mivneh heading in the outside margin. The Ad Kan expression is in quotation marks, since that's the phrase we've put in a triangle. And we've written on under our Mivneh heading, Dechias HaHashvo'o, a rejection of the paralleling, Shemuzkar Liel, that we mentioned just before. So we're going to engage in this in a rejection of the paralleling. There will be more to say by way of markings as we go on in the Gemara. So let us now continue. Mi mai. Who is to say, or from where do you say, that this parallel is necessarily so? Dilma ad kan lo komar Rebbe Meir hosam. It might be that Rabbi Meir's hesitation or his restriction was in the case of something you are doing a formal act of making a mum, and that's why he said, "Do not bloodlet in a part of the body that will not heal." That's the ovid. The ovid biyodayim means you're actively imposing the mum. Avol hocha. But here in the case of the truma, the gruma, where you're not actually imposing tuma on the wine, you're simply, you would be exposing the barrel to a place that it could become tame. That's called the gruma. Gruma means causing. Causative as opposed to active. But here in the case of the truma, maybe Rebbe Yoshua Svira Leh. Maybe that same Rebbe Meir in the case of the Bechor would adopt Rabbi Yoshua's approach to the case of the barrel of wine, where the barrel of wine had been in a closed place, in a protected place. Maybe Rabbi Meir would say you can put it in a place that is open to Tumah, just as long as you don't actually actively make it Tumah, simply exposing it to the possibility of it becoming Tumah, that might be allowed. The Ad Kan Lo Kamar Rabbi Elazar Hosam, and it could be that till now Rabbi Elazar says what he does in the case of the Truma, where he said if it was you should protect the barrel of wine. Why there does he exercise precaution? Eloshemo Yovo Eliovia Tarena, because it could be, since we were dealing with a suffix concerning the Tumah, Elio, the prophet Elio, might appear one day and declare the suffix as being actually Tohar Mamish, completely Tohar. So what a great shame it would be to even subject the wine to any form of Tumah, when, after all, since it was a matter of doubt, it could become revealed that it's completely tar. So why not try to protect it? Avol hocha, in the case of the Bechor, the Ishavik lay mayas, if you leave it as it is, there's no benefit that could possibly arise. It's going to die. Kirabonon svira lay. It could be that the same precautious Rebbe Elazar in the case of Truma will adopt the approach of the Rabbonon in the case of the Bechor, where go ahead, do something, even if it's in a place of the body that it will become a Baal Mum. Because if you leave it as is, you're not going to make the situation cannot get any better than it is now. So maybe go ahead and do something to keep it alive before it dies. At least that way you'll enable it to, by shechting it, or by bloodletting it, you'll enable it to stay alive, you'll be able to eat it eventually. V'ad kan lo ko'amri rabbonon hocha, and likewise, it could be that the rabbonon said what they did in the case of the Bechor, de'ishavik le'mayis. In other words, Rabbanan allowed you to take a measure, to take measures to bloodlet, even in a place that it will make it into a blemish. That is because if you don't do anything, it will die. Aval hasam, in the case of the truma, shemo yovel yovitarena, krevi lezer svirolahu. Since there's a possibility that it could be determined that the wine is tohor mamish, it's truma tohora, the Rabbanon of Bechor might adopt Rabbi Elezer, his approach in the case of the wine, and say, protect it. The ad kan lo ko'oma Rabbi Yudah hocha, and it could be that Rabbi Yudah, here in the case of Bechor, who said, don't do anything, the ka'ovid biodayim, because in the case of the Bechor, you would have been doing something actively. Aval hasam, but in the case of truma, degroma, that you weren't doing anything actively per se, you were simply setting it up to a possibility of becoming tamei. Karebi Yeshua Svirleib, that same restrictive Rabbi Yudah Bechor might accept the lenient Rabbi Yeshua approach in the case of the wine. The ad kan lo komar Rabban Gamliel hasam, and it could be that Rabban Gamliel, in the case of the truma, said what he did, which was basically said, he said, maintain status quo. Why? Don't subject the wine to any further problems, because maybe the wine is tahor. Eliyahu Hanavi will come and declare it tahor. In the case of the Bechor, if you leave it as is, it will definitely die. Kerabonon Svira Lei. Rabban Gamliel would hold like the Rabbanon, which allows you to take measures, because there is no possible benefit that could arise in the status quo, the maintenance of the Bechor as it is. So you can see that we have basically derailed any possibility of paralleling the sheet is found by the Bechor with the sheet is found by the Chavis Shel Truma. The Oid, and furthermore, Hocha Bekroi Pligi, the Hasam Bekroi Pligi. The topics, the machlokas, the controversy concerning the Mum by the Bechor are scriptural points, and it's concerning machloikis and concerning psukim that they argue, and likewise with regard to the truma, it's an issue of a controversy surrounding psukim. In other words, we're not even dealing with svoros per se, we're dealing with how you look at psukim in each respective realm. Before we go further, we must take time to make a structural observation. Under our Mivneh heading in the outside margin, you'll notice a double underline featured, highlighting the words Hocha and Hasam. We have a little Aleph and Beis by the words Hocha and Hasam. These markings will be very helpful when we continue with the Gemara. The Aleph and Beis represent Bemum and Betruma, Bekroi Pligi. We had mentioned that with regard to the topics of Mum and Truma, the controversy surrounds how to darshan psukim, how to look at, how to expound upon biblical verses. HaGemora acharei haketa besograim, the Gemara after the bracketed section that appears in the Gemara, Yavi hapsukim uvemai chokim, will present the psukim, the relevant psukim, to the realm of Baal Mum, which is once again after the bracketed session. You will see again an Aleph appears, and a Beis will appear on Daf Lamed Dalid Omed Aleph, where the topic of Truma and its relevant Pusuk arises. We mentioned there would be a bracketed section. We have a note to explain the purpose of these brackets. And also, you will notice in the Gemara itself a bracket length indicator. This is a vertical dash dotted line that appears to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. So, let us read the note that we have. The Sograyim L'Shem Diluk. This is a note that we're reading on the inside margin where we see the star. These brackets are for skipping purposes. Kidei Lumoid Beretzef. In order to learn with a sense of continuity, Ha de Ka'omar, that which was just said in the Gemara, Ha 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 Sam Bekroi Pligi. By pointing this out, we notice that the Gemara's title was here and there, meaning here in the case of Balmum and there in the case of Truma. The Tanaic controversy surrounds Psukim. After the bracketed section, the Gemara gets you right into that. So we're maintaining this continuity of thought by skipping, by pointing out this phenomenon with our brackets. The Soha Sograyim, within the bracketed section, Muva Oid Shnei Tchumin, there will be presented two more areas of halacha, Shiyesh Aleim Haskoma, where there is no controversy, where there is agreement, Legabi Maisov Shelsheni, regarding the actions of a second individual, Badover Shikvar Nifsal Achrei Maisov Shelrishon, regarding something that has already been ruined by a former individual's action. The idea being that once something is ruined, can it be ruined any further? Or are there any practical manifestations of a problem with regard to the actions done by a second individual on something that has already become ruined or become puzzle? Though this may sound a bit abstract, once we get into the Gemara and its examples, things will become much clearer. Before we go further in the Gemara, we want to glance at the outside margin for an additional nosei, another topic heading. We will point out there are three gimel tchumen, three realms, shebishnai mehem, regarding two of these three realms, one of them mechametz achar mechametz, and number two mesores achar mesores. There is a prohibition of allowing a korban mincha. Korban mincha is a meal offering, and generally speaking, meal offerings must be maintained as non-fermented dough. Similar to Pesach, where we know matzah making must be non-chometz, non-fermented, so too with regard to a korban mincha. Let us say someone in kneading the korban mincha allowed the dough to sit till it began to ferment. So you have dough that's already fermented, and that the person who was responsible for that first stage of preparation and allowing it to ferment is considered guilty of being mechametz the mincha. Let us say after that someone comes along and shapes the loaves and puts them in the oven for baking. He's dealing with something that's basically already become chametz. But nevertheless, the Torah says that he too is guilty of being mechametz the mincha. In other words, the continuing in the mincha procedure, dealing with something that's become chametz, one is guilty for that. So we see that the actions of the second individual concerning something that's already become unfit, nevertheless are considered meaningful, in a negative sense, meaningful actions. The case of Mesaris Achar Mesaris involves an animal, the sterilization of a male animal. When you're dealing with a male, there are male organs, we can refer to them as the beitzim, or in English, the testicles. The beitzim are connected to the other reproductive organs through a tube. The zera, the sperm of the animal, is produced in the beitzim. If the tube is slit, merely slit, so the zera won't enter the rest of the apparatus enabling the male to procreate. Let us say after the tube was merely slit, someone comes along and totally disconnects, rips the beitzim from the rest of the apparatus. So he is, what is the second person doing? He is ripping away the beitzim from an animal that was already sterilized. It was already mesuras. This is called mesares achar mesares. We know that regarding that, he too, the second individual, similar to the case of mechametz achar mechametz, is guilty of a wrongdoing. Once again, even though in both of these cases, the second party was merely acting upon something that was already ruined. So our note says that in these two cases, afal pi shekvar b'maisa shel harishon nifsal lekulei alma, even though through the actions of the first person this has been ruined, lekulei alma k'shebo hasheni v'oisa maisa nami chayev. When the second one comes along and does his action, he nevertheless is held guilty as well. Uva mikreshlishi, regarding the third topic, matil mum bebal mum, yesh machlokes. But regarding the case of blemish making in something that's already considered blemished, and as we said earlier, the b'chor she'ochsei dam is an animal that we say is very ill. And in its state of Ochsudam, it's viewed as a blemished animal. In fact, the expression appears in the Meforshim, Ein Lucha Balmum Gadol Mizeh. You don't have a greater example of a Balmum than this. Nevertheless, is there a problem in making an additional mum in such an animal? That will be a point of controversy. So, in the brackets, what we have done is presented the two of the three topics, where you have Hakol Moedim. If you look at your marked Gemaras, you'll notice there's a diagonal dashed underline under the expression Hakol Moedim. A few lines later, you find a similar dashed underlining by the expression Loi Nechleku Ela, where the Gemara says that there is a machlokas concerning the third realm. And we have numberings that accompany this as well, showing you the presentation of three areas. So, after all has been said and done, we pointed out that with regard to the mum and the baal mum and the truma issues that we saw before, the Tanaic controversies are surrounding how to look at psukim. Those relevant psukim and machlokesim will be presented after the bracketed section. In the meantime, then, all that having been said, we will now learn the Gemara straight through. The Gemara continues, starting with the beginning of the brackets. The Omar Reb Chiya Bar Abba Omar Reb Yochanan. Hakol Modim, everyone will agree, b'mechametz achar mechametz shul chayov, that in the case of the processing of a korban mincha meal offering in a chometz fashion, that the second person, the mechametz achar mechametz, the second person who continues processing it after it was already made into chometz, is also guilty. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, lo yisoyfe chometz, v'lo yisase. It says, one should not bake it as chametz, and one should not make it as chametz. And Rashi explains that, well, once you tell me lo yisase, that you're not allowed to make it as chametz, the word making it includes all the procedures, the kneading, the shaping, the baking. Why then does the Torah feature as a separate iser, a separate prohibition, lo sofe chametz? So as from that we learn that every singular action has significance. And hence, even if it was already made into chametz, any subsequent action done to the mincha in the mincha procedure will also carry with it guilt. Number two, b'mesores achar mesores, shehu chayov. Everyone agrees in this case that once a male animal has become sterilized, if someone else comes along and continues that, he too will be chayav, even though his action was done on an animal that essentially is already sterile. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, umolch v'kosus v'nosuk v'korus. And from this we darshanim al kores chayav, if for merely making a slit in the tubes, Kores means to cut, make a cut, a slit. He is guilty. Al nosek lo kol shekein, for a complete ripping out, would he all the more so be guilty? Of course, yes. So why does the Torah have to mention that nosek is chayav? If on the lesser act one is already guilty, for the more significant complete act, certainly one would be guilty. Elolavi nosek achar kores. The Torah is alluding to not a separate complete act of ripping out, but rather someone who's coming to rip out after karisa was already done, after a partial slit was made, and the animal is sterile. Someone else completes the act by ripping out the beitzim. He will also be chayav. loy nechleku ela. There is controversy only regarding a third realm, b'matil mum b'bal mum. The case here is imposing a blemish on an animal that was already blemished. This third realm is similar to mechametz, the mechametz achar mechametz, and the mesaris achar mesaris in the fact that you have a second action being done after something was already a problem. But in the first two cases, the mechametz achar mechametz and mesaris achar mesaris, there was no controversy that the second person will be guilty. In this third category, which was the category we were dealing with earlier, matil mum b'bal mum, there is a machlokes. Now, how do we have in our case a matil mum bibal mum? The bal mum, the primary mum, is the fact that it's ochsoy dam. It's already sickly. Now, can I bloodlet? Can I make a lancet slit in such an animal? And as we mentioned before, the aleph that you see circled is a reference to the point that the issue of matil mum bibal mum is an issue based on psukim, as we highlighted before with the aleph that was encircled, where you see the double underlined ha-ha expression. So the Gemara says, here in the case of matil mum b'bal mum, there is a machlokes, Rabbi Meir Sovar, Rabbi Meir who is restrictive, who says you cannot make a lancet insert or slit at a point that it will make an additional mum, because the pasuk says kol mum lo yebo. Rabbanan Savri, the Rabbanan who disagree, who says you are allowed to make a blemish in something like this that's already a bamum, because they say the pasuk says tamim ye l'ratzon, which they take to mean that the prohibition of making a mum only applies to an animal that is tamim, that is unblemished. But once an animal is already blemished, then this restriction doesn't apply. Before going further in the Gemara, let's just take note of the fact that we have the entire pasuk quoted on the side of our Gemara. Vayikra Chof Beis Pasuk Chof Aleph. We'll read the pasuk. It says, "V'ish ki yakriv zevach shlomim l'Hashem l'falei neder l'dava b'boker u'butzon tamim yel rotzon kol mum lo yebo." Let us glance at the Rashi. The Rashi we're looking at, you'll find very close to the bottom, kol mum lo yebo. This Rashi is going on the point that Rabbi Meir made. Rabbi Meir, who restricted imposing a blemish on an animal that's classified as blemished already. Kol mum lo yebo, Rashi says, v'kori bei lo yahaye bo, means shelo yatil mum. Don't make a blemish in it. The pasuk could have just said the word mum, v'ksiv kol mum. It uses an inclusive expression, kol mum, l'rabo yisafilu bal mum. This comes to include even the case of an animal that was already blemished. Shelo yatil boi mum acher. Don't make an additional mum in it. That's Rabbi Meir's opinion. However, Rabbanan Savri, Rashi continues, darshinon kule kra, that you don't break up the pasuk and look at it in a phrase fashion, but look at the entire pasuk. Tomim ye l'ratzon kol mum lo yebo. Demashma, tomim means haroi l'ratzon, something that's fit for being offered as a sacrifice. Omar tiloch de kol mum lo tatil bo. Only in that case does the restriction of placing a mum in it apply. Avo baal mum loy. But something that's already a baal mum, that restriction does not apply. Let us continue in the Gemara. At this point, the Gemara will now work its way back and forth between these two shittas, Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanan, and what does each one do with the other one's quote. Rabbi Meir, Hai tomim yeh lorotzoi mai ovid lei. Rabbi Meir, who was restrictive, what does he do with this phrase which seemed to lead us to leniency, meaning that the restriction of making a mum only applies to something that is unblemished? So, Rabbi Boyale, Rabbi Meir will need it, will use it, limute balmum meikoro, something that is was always a balmum. It was, let's say, born as a balmum, born as blemished, that's called balmum meikoro. Something like that, there would be no iser of imposing, no restriction of imposing a mum. So, the Gemara says, do I really need a posik for that? To allow that, balmum meikoro pshita dikla bi'almahu, an animal born as blemished, it never had a chance of being a sacrifice in the first place. So it seems obvious that there would be no mum restriction there. Dikla bi'almahu means it's basically a piece of wood. In other words, it has no sanctity significance at all. So it's so obvious. Do you really need a pasuk to tell me that one would be allowed to impose a blemish on a balmum meikoro? Ella, rather, what is the pasuk needed for? As far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, lumute psule hamukdashim laachar pidyonon, to tell us regarding psule mukdashim, those are animals that were dedicated as sacrifice that became blemished. And in this case, we're already redeemed. Salka de Techamino. I would have thought without this posik, Hoyl the Asiri Begizim Avoda, since we know that Psule Hamukdashim, even after they are redeemed, are forbidden in shearing and working. You can't plow with them even after they've been redeemed. Bimumin nami litzru. I would have thought that there would also be a restriction or prohibition of imposing a blemish on such an animal. Komash malon. That's what this pasuk of tomim yel ratzon means, according to Rabbi Meir, that a psul mukdashim that was already redeemed, there is no longer any prohibition of imposing a blemish on it. So, Rabbi Meir, though he is machmir, has a use for the lenient aspect of the pasuk. The rabbanon nami hoksiv komum lo yebo. The rabbanon who were mekil, who were lenient, what do they do with the komum lo yebo portion of the pasuk, which seems to indicate a restriction? So they will tell you, legroma hu dasi. It comes to teach me laws regarding causing a mum to arise, causing groma, even though you are not doing imposing a mum actively. Nevertheless, to cause a mum to arise, would be a forbidden thing to do, of course, provided you're dealing with something that's already, that is still tamim, that is unblemished. The Sanya, the source, expands on this point. Mum lo yebo. That is a quote from the pasuk. Ein li elo shelo yitein bo mum. I would think that means only one is not allowed to actively impose a blemish. Minayin shelo yovi dveila ubotzek. From where would I know that one should not bring dveila, pressed figs, or botzek, dough, the anicheno al ha'oizen, and put it on the ear of an animal, of a sacrifice or of a bechor? Today shiavo hakelev yochlena. This would entice a dog to come and take a bite out of it, thereby leaving the sacrifice blemished. So from where do I know that one should not do this? One should not place the vela or the botzek on the korban's ear. Talmud lomar kol mum. Omar mum, vomar kol mum. The kol comes to include groma, as being forbidden to do when you're dealing with a tumim animal, as far as the Rabbanon are concerned. So what we have seen in the last few lines of Gemara, we've seen the psukim that are relevant to this machlokes, tanoim, regarding making a mum in a bal mum, machlokes, Rabbi Meir, and the chomim, each one citing a section of the pasuk relevant to their particular points of view, and what does each one do with the other one's citation. Notice we have a base, hocha bekroi pligi. We're here now on the fourth line from the top of daf lamed dalet omed aleph. Here, in the case of Truma, also the controversy that we saw in the Tanaic source at the on Daf Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis is a pasuk based controversy. The Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, V'chein Omar Rish Logish, V'chein Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabba Bar Avua, all of these Rabbonan all say, V'ani hine nosati l'cho es mishmeres tru mosai. Rav Elazar Sovar, v'shtei tru mos ha-kosuv medaber. Now just to review, you can glance back at the original source where the Truma issue came up, and Rav Elazar took a restrictive approach, meaning if the barrel of Sofek Truma were left in an exposed place, one should put it into a more secure location. So that was Rebbe Elazar, and we saw Rebbe Yeshua disagree, saying that you can actually expose it to the possibility of Tuma. And we're saying that this machlokas surrounds Psukim. Rebbe Elazar Savar, b'shtei trumos hakosuv medaber. The pasuk that says Mishmeres Tru Mosai, he reads it, he understands the pasuk the way it is read in the Torah. In other words, the Torah doesn't have vowels in the words, but how are we to understand the meaning of the psukim? Well, he says, well, based on the way we would read it, and the word Tru Mosai is read, even though the letters on their own would indicate singular, Tru Mosi, however, through the way we read it, it comes out Tru Mosai, and he says this is the way you darshan it. B'shtei Trumos, it's a plural expression, so it's referring to two kinds of Truma. Achas Truma Tahora, v'achas Truma Tluya. Tluya means suffix, doubt, Truma. The Amar Achmona, Ovid La Shimor, and the Torah says Mishmeres, means make for it a Shimor, guard it, protect it. So that according to Rebbe Elazar, the Pasuk itself is telling me, protect the suffix, the Truma that suffix Tomei. Rebbe Yeshua, Truma Si Ksiv. And Rebbe Yeshua, on the other hand, says, well, the word appears in letter form in the singular. Hence, the Torah is not saying mishmeres regarding something that's safek tame. The Torah is saying maybe if something is completely tahor, then you have to protect it. But but something that is safek, that does not require shimor. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.